Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Yesterday, a Monday, the day after the Fail Mary, whatever you want to call it, the day that the Bears blew their season, Matt Eberflus, boy, when you look at the Bears, they lost a football game, he lost the benefit of the doubt, and he's in danger of losing his team.
At the very least, you need to bench him to begin the game, and then you can go to him. But if you do nothing, you are going to look so weak.
I don't think they're going to do anything.
I think you have to do it publicly. You have to do something so that everybody knows that you sat up and took notice.
So what'd you do with Tyreek?
Would you bench him?
You got to sit him and say, listen, you know, that's right now you're detrimental to this football team winning. And you need to prove it not just to me. This is a team thing. Flus got to make decisions for a team. There's a history here is what I'm saying.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Interesting stuff there from Coach Wannstedt yesterday. And the Bears back at Hallis Hall today to begin their preparations. Did you see the line has gone and opened at +1.5 to Arizona? It is now a pick'em.
Morning, Mully. Yes, happy Wednesday. Bears back to work at Hallis Hall. Lot going on in the city. The White Sox have a manager.
Yeah. What's the over-under? Now that Will Venable is taking over the White Sox job, and they can't announce it till the season ends, apparently, unless MLB gives him permission, what would be the over-under for win total next year?
I don't know.
Does he have to be 20 games better to have a successful season? If you are over 100 losses, is it a successful season?
I don't know. I think that's probably the challenge that he considered before saying yes to the job, according to various reports.
Mm-hmm.
I think it broke on from Scott Merkin, who worked for MLB.com and WhiteSox.com. last night, and then it was confirmed by the Sun-Times and other outlets. I don't think he has any illusions. I don't know that this is a team that's going to win more than, 62, 65 games next year?
That would be 21 games better.
Yeah. Well, they're going to be vastly improved. I would think it'd be hard for them to be worse. 100 losses still seems like a realistic outcome for 2025.
My point. Is that successful? I mean, we moved the bar so much.
I don't know. I'm not there yet. I'm not into predicting 2025 yet. I'm processing the fact that they finally got a manager after being linked to 11 different guys, a list that was very long and a process that was pretty exhaustive. They come up with Will Venable, who former major leaguer, former Cub assistant
to Joe Maddon.
Former Princeton basketball player. And he's got a very interesting background. He's an Ivy Leaguer. An Ivy Leaguer heads to the South Side to be the manager of the White Sox. Thoughts? You not have any thoughts?
I asked. I gave you my thoughts. What resembles success for his first year as a manager?
Progress.
And I mean, what I like about it, what I like about the hire is that he apparently turned down the Mets. And also was interviewing with the Marlins, and I don't know if he had a chance there or not, but he took the Sox job. So the fact that he took it would indicate that he has turned down jobs in the past, and this is one that appeals to him, and he'd rather be in Chicago than Florida. He's not waiting. He's not putting him off. He's
that's encouraging
up for the White Sox.
That's a good sign.
Well, I mean, again, I just wonder what else is a good sign. I mean, this is... I just feel like there are a host of issues when you lose, whatever, 141 games.
Yep.
It's difficult to determine what success looks like and how quickly a winning season would take. Years.
He turned 42 yesterday. It was his birthday. He got his birthday present and first-time manager. Was on the bench for Bruce Bochy. He... was
obsessed with birthdays.
That's not me. I wanted to kind of like give you something good about this move that you might be happy about.
I'm delighted they got a manager. It's great.
He keeps good company. When you have a manager look.
Bruce Bochy would have been a good manager.
Yes, he would have. He sat next to Bruce Bochy for the last couple of years. Before that, he sat next to Alex Cora for a couple of years. Yep. Before that, he worked for Joe Maddon for a couple of years. He came to the Cubs organization because Theo Epstein tabbed him as bright enough to make the transition from playing career to front office. I think those are good people in your baseball background, and those are lines on your resume that stand out. So at the very least, he's coming to town with some better credentials than the last guy who had the job.
Well, I mean, think about it.
That guy
came to town with really limited credentials, and now he has the worst credentials ever.
Okay.
So, yep. I mean, God bless him.
That's true. I can't argue with that.
Listen, they got a manager. That's great. I'm sure the hiring will be official, and I'm sure we'll hear from people, and we'll find out.
Well, I think there was a sense that had last night's World Series ended with a sweep, we would be talking about a press conference tomorrow.
Pity.
And
I'm a Dodger fan now. Let's get it over with.
The Yankees extended their stay.
Yeah.
And they will play game 5 tonight. Garrett Cole.
Probably win that.
And then they will have to wait a little bit longer to introduce the next White Sox manager. I know you'll be disappointed.
No, I'll get through it somehow. But, yeah, no, I mean, you want to know my honest opinion. I'm very curious what success looks like on the South Side these days. That's all. That's not, you know, am I happy they got a manager? Yeah, there are elements of this guy and his background that are very appealing. But I think there are a host of issues and problems, and you'd like to find out if you know, we always say the managers are supposedly worth one or two wins, right? Now, maybe it's different given the situation that was here, but one or two isn't gonna flip the flapjacks, if I may say so.
No, I know what you're saying. I think he, once they determined they were not going to go for a manager with any experience, Skip Schumacher wasn't even part of the conversation or speculation lately. He was a guy whose name came up early and often, but I don't know where he goes next. He's certainly not going to go to the Marlins. That's where he's leaving. They have the only other opening. And
Maybe go to the WNBA. They seem to fire every coach. They got about 15 openings, don't they?
They do have a few openings. Maybe Stacey Dales is a candidate. Some of those. We'll talk to her at 9 o'clock.
Are there more MLB jobs that could open up?
I don't think so, unless they're going to fire Aaron Boone, which would seem kind of absurd.
Dave Roberts, if they blow the 3-0
If Dave Roberts
lead.
Blows the, yeah, a 3-0 lead, the Dodgers job might be open, but I don't think that Skip Schumacher would be a candidate there necessarily. I don't know where he's going to be, but if the White Sox were not going to go after a manager with experience, you were going to get somebody like this who comes without any managing experience, but with a lot of credentials and recommendations and things that should speak to his baseball acumen, hopefully. Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, there's hoping.
Do you not have any reaction to this?
I said, okay. I want to know what success looks like, and I asked you if you could define it for me, and you said you don't want to talk about the baseball season, that it was too early, and
then you asked
me how I feel about a team that just
you want
lost
me to
141 games.
Victories for a team that is incomplete.
What kind of an investment do you think they're making in Will?
Probably a four-year investment, five-year investment. I'm not quite sure.
Well, I mean, I think that's what I think is interesting. Like finding out how long they're investing in him.
Well, it's a minimum 3, as you're saying.
It's got to be 3.
So,
but is it 5?
If he was a hot candidate, you would hope that they were willing to.
And is that why he's here versus not down in Miami?
That's a very good question.
Perhaps. That could be one of the things.
That's a good question.
Yep. So they'll figure out when to announce this officially, when to introduce him to the Sox media, and when we can start making our predictions.
Does Grady Sizemore stick around on the staff
I don't
in
know.
The organization?
Maybe.
Nah.
He was part of this. I mean, he was part of the regime before.
Supposedly down to the final four.
Yeah.
According to Chuck Garfine the other day on Twitter.
Yeah, he was down to the final four. I'm not sure what his role would be. It would be kind of odd for him to be. This is a team that supported
what was his
Grady
role?
Sizemore.
What was his role prior?
I'm not sure.
Was he an assistant hitting coach?
Well, he wasn't the bench coach.
No. I think he was an assistant hitting coach.
Mm-hmm. He was a surprise guy to be named interim manager based on what he did before.
Nobody saw that coming. No.
Yeah. I'm sure it'd be Grady Sizemore would have options in the game.
He probably knows a lot of people. Venable. He's been around a lot of different teams. He probably has a close group of friends that he's going to be able to hire with him, I would imagine. If he's coming in and taking over in a situation like this where you don't know what you have, as David's pointing out, you don't know what the players, you don't know who they are or what they look like. And, you know, are his credentials good? Sure. You know, Ivy Leaguer, bright guy, worked for good people, worked with good teams. I mean, it's curious that he took the job, frankly, if he really did turn down the Mets, if that's accurate.
Well, he turned down the Mets and he turned down the Guardians last year in terms of having options because he felt like there was a feeling in Texas that he would be the heir apparent to Bruce Bochy.
Right.
When Bruce Bochy suggested at the end of this season that he wasn't done yet, maybe that sent a good message to a guy like Will Venable that, well, maybe I'm not going to be manager here as quickly as I thought that I would, and I'll start to entertain other options. Certainly there weren't very many this offseason. The White Sox and the Marlins, the Reds was open for a minute, and then Terry Francona, who was on the score last Saturday morning with Bruce and Ryan McGuffey. That was interesting. He took the Reds job, surprisingly. And guys like David Bell, David Ross, and Skip Schumacher, guys with experience, are still out of jobs. And so the White Sox go in a direction that Will Venable's name has been out there before, so it is somewhat respected and well-known. But we'll see what kind of impression he makes at the opening press conference. As we have learned, we don't make too much of those.
No. I mean, again, it's a move, and it makes the White Sox better. But, you know, you got to know who's on the field. So that's my reaction to it. It's great. It's good that they've gotten someone that was wanted by others. It's great. But there's a lot of work, and so you just it's hard to get. It's hard. I just want to know what that means in terms of how I evaluate this guy. If a manager comes in and is 20 games better than whatever he took over, isn't that a pretty successful season? Unless it's the worst season in baseball history.
Well, chances are, you're going to be improved significantly if your standard is just don't lose 121 games. And so if you lose 110 games, you're 11 games better, and that would qualify as a major improvement by most standards. If you lose 100 games, you're 21 games better. I would assume that the arrow can only be pointing up for somebody who takes over this job. There is nowhere to go but up. So that would be encouraging.
There you go. That's good stuff. Great, great news. The Freddie Freeman thing is amazing. Okay. They lost yesterday, so they had won the first three games of the World Series, but they end up getting stormed. They ended up losing 11-5 in the elimination game, the first of a few coming up here. But Freddie Freeman hit another home run. That is six straight World Series games in which he's hit a homer. That is like when I heard he hit a home run, I couldn't believe it. I had to immediately run to the television and look because
he's on a roll. He's very hot. It was effortless. He swinging the bat was just he connected, and I was impressed with Freddie Freeman as well as the home run streak, which is incredible. But this is a guy playing on a bad ankle and still hustling down the line and beating out a double play grounder so he drove in a run. And that's a winning player. That's a guy that is incredible. Now a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And still playing as hard as an unproven rookie. So you have a lot of respect for Freddie Freeman. And the Dodgers, Yeah, they weren't going to sweep. I mean, the Yankees are going to have their day. I hope it goes back to L.A. Garrett Cole going tonight.
Right.
That will be
Jack Flaherty.
Great drama. Jack Flaherty.
Pretty good in the first one.
Garrett Cole. It'll be fun. But if Freeman homers again, goodness sakes.
Bad news from the Bulls. Lonzo Ball is out at least 10 days. He's going to be reassessed in 10 days with a right wrist injury. So this is not connected to the knee. This is a different injury altogether. But he apparently will be out for a little bit, and then they will reevaluate him and give you a decision on what that looks like. So he will not be available to them tonight. They host the Orlando Magic. Paolo Banchero, the brilliant Dookie, the fine Brazilian, coming in, and that's going to be a tough match.
Banchero scored 50 against the Pacers, yep. And now the Bulls have a challenge. Patrick Williams and company, I guess it's going to take more than one guy to shut him down. Magic, very talented team, coming off a really bounce-back season. And Lonzo Ball, when he got the email last night from the Bulls about 7:45, and the tagline or subject line is Lonzo Ball update, all that you could think, all that I thought was, oh gosh, this is going to be something bad. And it's not good that he has a wrist injury out for 10 days, but it's better than the alternative and what you feared. I thought it was going to be something about his knee.
Yeah, you're right. That was the first thought that goes through your head. And I the minute I saw it, I just thought, God, I hope it's soreness. Like, I hope they didn't find it. But it's soreness in the wrist, as it turns out.
Soreness in the wrist. He played 18 minutes the other night in Memphis, and now they're going to be without him. They're a different team with him on the floor. That offense functions at a higher level, and you just have a better feeling about everything when he's playing. When he doesn't play, things seem a little more helter-skelter.
Yeah, I'm still getting used to Josh Giddey as the kind of trigger man of that offense. I think that Kobe seems to be just getting used to it as well. And I think that they may be, and he definitely is a better player when he's kind of running the show. It's interesting because he's now getting the ball in his hands a little bit more, Kobe White, and I think they're better when he is doing that.
There were stints the other night with Ball and Giddey on the floor at the same time. Didn't think we'd see that this early.
No.
That's interesting. Giddey had nearly a triple-double on Monday night in Memphis, so that's promising for him. Kobe White, he's just so streaky. It's just hard to know what is going to work and what won't work, what's going to make him get hot from three-point range and what won't. But tonight's a challenge. They're back at home. Kobe White needs to have a good game on his home court, unlike Saturday night. That was not what you're looking for. So tonight is a good challenge. Two teams, a lot of talent. And Zach LaVine, boy, he just keeps on filling it up.
Yeah. How do you read that, David, when you see Zach LaVine doing well? Do you think, wow, his trade value is going up? Are we in that position? Or do you think at least they got Zach LaVine?
I think the latter, because it's way too early to be evaluating the trade market. The NBA trade market won't start to take shape until probably December-ish. And that seems like a long time from now. So what you're gauging now, I think, is what Zach looks like when he's fully healthy, which he is, without DeMar DeRozan, which he's gone. And now he's still a guy that can... He had 11 in the fourth quarter on Monday night, and he had 30 overall. This is somebody who can still fill it up and play at an all-star level, and I think that's the biggest takeaway.
It is the 30th of October. I mean, it is. I know what you're saying, but I do think that the trade thought is still kind of omnipresent with him. It kind of hangs over the team a little bit.
Okay. You asked me what I thought.
I'm just saying, I think that tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, is Halloween. Number one, buy some candy, just for yourself. Don't give any of it away. No, get the kids some candy, for the love of God. Lovely thing to do. And if you got a costume, you're going to have to break it up.
Yes. Well, we'll see tonight.
Costume?
No, I do not. I do not have a standard Halloween costume. I don't know. Do you?
Oh, of course. I've got many different costumes.
Okay. What are you going to be disguised as then?
Well, dressed up as? My wife won't let me wear my axe murderer mask because she feels it scares the children. So I'll probably just go.
Your children are still young enough to be scared?
My children.
Oh, the other children?
The ones that ring the doorbell.
Okay.
Didn't you recently send a picture out in the group you were dressed up as something?
Well, I have like a little priest garb that I used to wear back when I was in college. So I still have that thing. It's just like a long vest. But I put on the axe murderer over that, and it really gave a bad effect. But I was told I couldn't wear that, so I sent out a photo to you guys a year ago. Thank you for remembering, Dustin.
Not dressing up on CHSN, David, Thursday night?
Anything's possible. I haven't gotten the rundown yet. I don't know. I hope. I would not
I
think
hope
so.
Not. Is that what you're going to say? Yeah.
I was going to say, I hope not.
I know. I know.
So you never quite know.
I'm going to suggest it if they're listening.
I would hope that you wouldn't suggest that.
I just did.
Yeah. Well, we're not on the simulcast yet. Nobody's listening. They're not up yet.
Don't suggest that later.
No. We're only doing 2 hours of radio now.
No, I didn't say that. Oh, okay. I just said that.
It sounded like that.
It's unlikely that somebody over there might be listening this early. Maybe that, you know, it's long night.
I got introduced to a high ranking person. I got to say, said any suggestions, please. Fair.
I don't think dressing up for Halloween is something that I would recommend necessarily for people that are doing television.
Like a bottle of ranch. You could be a bottle of ranch.
Listen, I ate an Uncrustable the other night or last week as part of a segment. So yeah.
That's like a big fuel for athletes. Like athletes love Uncrustables.
Well, that's the thing. The Denver Broncos goes through 700 or so. Yeah. There's a story about it. What is with the Uncrustables?
I think it's easy. I think
what is it?
It's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Okay,
with no crust. It's almost like a little pie almost. The bread is pinched along a circle.
And they're better frozen.
It's like a disc,
right?
They come frozen. You throw them overnight. My daughter eats one every day. One of my two daughters eats one every day. They're very popular.
And the NFL, easy, NFL players go through them like crazy.
Oh yeah, like they're walking off the field. They take them. Like literally, like going into the locker room.
Tyler Ferengul, you ever have an Uncrustable?
Back in the day, yeah. I haven't
Back
had one
in the
in
day,
while,
they're really like, what? They're not that.
It's been a couple years.
Okay.
I mean, it seems ridiculous. Like, make the sandwich and cut the crust off yourself, right?
It's marketing genius.
I just feel like what you're saying there.
Your children are too old. You missed the Uncrustables.
We missed the Uncrustables, mercifully. Mm-hmm. I personally have never enjoyed. Yeah, I guess if you had like
not a PB&J guy.
No, I don't mind PB&J. I'm just saying, I think I feel like cutting off the crust of bread is wasteful. I just feel like
I don't throw it in the garbage. I might throw it in the front yard and let the birds have it. Oh, you're not going to be like one of the people who own one of our favorite baseball teams and like throw hot dogs in the garbage.
Who's that?
Working on a TV show? Remember that one?
Oh, my God.
I don't remember that one.
That was Todd Ricketts on the Undercover Boss episode.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Dustin is still miffed about that. That's
you
crazy.
Don't waste food.
It was a hot dog.
Yeah, and he paid for it out of his own pocket.
What does that mean? But not really food,
it's not
David?
Food. I've got a photo of you.
I know.
Your photo.
Listen, I will eat things so to answer your question.
Dress as a hot dog.
I will do things for the sake of a show. I ate a hot dog for you guys. That wasn't for me.
The Uncrustable was for the show?
The Uncrustable was for the show.
Okay, all right. It's fair.
The other stuff, I will do things for the show, but they're not my first preference.
All right, we've got the pick six next. We're going to pick apart all the stories of the day, and we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How concerned are you about the Bears' injury list later today? Are you most worried about offensive lineman Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins, now Bill Murray? He's on the IR with a pec. Or is it all about the defensive side? Montez Sweat. How about the quarterback, Kyler Murray? They're going to have to chase him down, right? What about Jaquan Brisker? What about Kyler Gordon?
Yeah, we'll get updates on some of those guys and some of those injuries, and it'll be very interesting. I'm curious about the offensive line, definitely curious about it, but I think that Montez Sweat is really the guy that matters most on this team. You know, he was not on the field for the Hail Mary. We know that. And they had real issues giving way too much time to the quarterback on that play Jaden Daniels had all day. And obviously there were other issues involved. But I think that when you think about a guy like Kyler Murray and what he can do, there were a couple of plays where Sweat was kind of holding containment, and you knew that Jaden Daniels wasn't going to get the edge on him. He just wasn't, the way the guy was positioned. So I think that was a big interesting moment for the Bears. You don't want him hurt at all. It's a shin injury. Apparently we'll get more clarity on that. And then obviously with Brisker and Gordon, a couple guys that are out, you'd like to get everybody back and get that secondary back to being the dominant force it is.
Well, Mully, you mentioned Sweat not being on the field, and I know this is part of the question, but not all. That's just one more reason why I think Eberflus erred in not rushing four. When Montez Sweat isn't one of your three, and he's clearly the best rusher you have,
he's worth two.
That you should have had another guy out there. But I'm going to keep saying it, and I'll say it again. I think the Bears win that game if Jaquan Brisker and or Kyler Gordon are on the field against the Commanders in that Hail Mary situation. And I think you need those guys. I really do. And the longer Brisker is out, the more concerned. I know I've been maybe sending up flares on this for going on 3 weeks now. The more concerned I am about him. This now seems like a long time to be in concussion protocol. So if he's not out there in a limited bait, like today is a walkthrough up at Hal. It's different. They're switching it up for some reason. Today is a walkthrough practice. At least that's what the report is. And if he's not part of that walkthrough, like he's not playing this week again. And they need, especially if discipline is going to come.
But he hasn't cleared concussion protocol. They haven't made any.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But yeah, the longer this goes, this is a bigger issue than I think we thought or made out right when it started. And I think one of those two guys could have made a difference on the Hail Mary or Fail Mary, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the final play. But I do think that Kyler Gordon, for instance, would have made his impact felt. And they need him back to make that kind of impact against a guy like Kyler Murray, athletic, mobile, and somebody who will make you pay down the field with his feet as much as his arm. I don't think that it's realistic to expect Jaquan Brisker to make a contribution Sunday, and I'm starting to wonder if this is just going to be the new normal for the Bears this season. He's a guy who plays so physically and with such a punishing mentality that it's hard to envision a guy coming back from concussion protocol until he does it, because those are the hardest injuries to project and predict. Offensively, I think the Bears are going to find out how much they miss Braxton Jones in the next couple weeks as they try to move on without him. I don't think that Kerryon Amagaji is ready for prime time. Maybe against the run, maybe blocking running plays on the edge in space, as they say, but holding his ground and protecting the pocket, he really struggled at times, and I think that he could be exposed, and they're going to find that weakness and exploit it if you're the Arizona Cardinals and every team moving forward. So Larry Borum still has to be a guy that you consider. What is the deal with Ryan Bates? Is he ever going to play football for the Bears? And you forget what he could do. Nate Davis might be a guy they have to go back to, but the offensive line is in more of a state of flux than you would like. The secondary could use some reinforcements, especially from Gordon. And Montez Sweat, I think he would play through whatever injury, hopefully that is minor, but he did not finish the game healthy. So you always wonder about that. And I'm very curious now about the walkthrough aspect of today's practice, because I did not realize that.
It's a good question.
Lost in the midst of so many mini controversies was the play of Caleb Williams. What was your biggest takeaway about Caleb's play against the Commanders, and what do you expect from him this week?
Couple takeaways. Number one, he's a clutch quarterback. He can, whatever that means to however you want to interpret it or define it, Caleb Williams finds a way to make plays when the clock is running down, when you need a drive, when you need a play made. I think Caleb Williams is showing signs of being a clutch quarterback. And that's something to take away from Sunday. I felt like early on, certainly the first three quarters, he was not as accurate as you would like. It was not as efficient as he was in the previous three games. And that was odd. Maybe he was in terms of managing his anxiety. Maybe it was because of he was just a little bit too amped up going back home. He does get nervous, I think. I think that he does create situations and maybe figure out that the ball sails on him when he's too amped up, because that happened too many times. So I think the takeaway is he needs to stay composed. When he's in control, he's in command. And when he's in command, he's a very good quarterback. Is finding that rhythm early on. And I think when he's in charge of things early on, he's better. So if I'm Shane Waldron, I may consider starting the game no huddle, up tempo, and increasing the pace, getting your quarterback into a rhythm, because once he's into a rhythm, he's much better.
Well, I thought he had his wow throw for me in that final touchdown drive. And I believe it was the throw to Keenan Allen, and the view that they re-showed on CBS was awesome. It was Patrick Mahomes-esque. He did that shortstop, sidearm, whipped the ball, perfect spiral, like threw it in between the armpit of a defender's arm, whistled it through in the hands, I believe, of Keenan Allen.
Was that Carter?
It was either Keenan Allen or Roma Dunze who caught the ball on that play. One of the two on that drive. It was one of those two plays. But it was spectacular to the point where I was like, that's the play. That's the best thing I've seen him do so far, considering the moment and everything. He had a great fourth quarter. You know, he said, and we talked about it and picked on it a little bit, or I did, he doesn't get nervous. He was nervous, or he was just playing bad to start that game in Landover, Maryland. And he recovered. So you have to give him credit for that. Each week he has gotten better. But now what the next step is I need to see him play four quarters of football. I don't think we've seen him play four good quarters yet.
Well, I think that he's playing, especially last week, that the problems on the offensive line were really glaring. And the idea that they were pressuring him on 51.6% of his pass attempts, and that pressure got to him within 2.47 seconds. That, you know, those numbers might not sound overwhelming, but the book on him is still to go after him, and they're getting there pretty quickly. At least Washington did, and that's not good. So every team will try to do the same thing. So you got to get the ball out quicker and quicker. And it seemed like it was getting worse as the game went on, to be brutally honest with you. And I do believe that he's taking more hits than you want him to. I know it's not like he's getting sacked nine times, but there was a couple of times where you're kind of watching the game and you're like, you know, throw the ball, because you just don't want him to take a hit. And he's getting dragged down, or they're running him in the middle of the field like they did at the end of the game. Like, what are you doing? You know, come on now. So I want him protected more, and that would be both with play calling and with the offensive line. But he has the special. He did do the special. And I thought Olin did a really good job with us of breaking down all these games where he's done something at the end of the half, or he's done something at the end of the game where you feel like, you know, you do have someone with a little something extra to his game. And that is probably the worst part about the loss, the idea that you couldn't celebrate him winning at the end.
Well, obviously, I knew that question would come up.
Oh, there's many more of those questions. You better believe it. What did you make of Bobby Wagner's comments on the Sports Business Journal's Dealmakers Conference regarding Tyreek Stevenson and Matt Eberflus?
Who would have thought the corner would be talking trash to the, you know, to the fans, that the coach wouldn't care about the play before and give us an extra 20 yards?
Wow, damning words. Are those the proper villains of the Bears' loss?
I don't know how you get away from not seeing what happened with Tyreek Stevenson and not say that you know, given that he was supposed to be covering the guy who caught the touchdown, that he actually recovered, ran over, and tipped to him. I don't know how you get away with not saying he was at fault on that play. You know, watching him pointing at the crowd, and that came from a video that was somebody in the stands was taking a video. It was extraordinary because the play is opening up outside. But that's also on the All-22 tape. So it's not like if some fan didn't have a camera, the Bears wouldn't have known about it. You'd have known about it. And anybody that had access to that footage would have known about it. So maybe it wouldn't have been as much of a social media sensation. But, yeah, and I think that Bobby Wagner is right, that Flusie letting them have the 13 yards was insane. And it put them in a position to get the ball in the end zone, and they did.
Well, gosh, I mean, I still think the villain in all of this is Tyreek Stevenson, because the coach went out of his way to tell us that he was the guy that was supposed to be blocking out the guy that ended up catching the ball. And Tyreek Stevenson was away from the play, had to be notified that the ball was in the air, tries to recover, and then is the guy that actually has a hand on the ball and tips it backwards, not forwards, not down, not left or right, tips it backwards into the hands of the guy that he was supposed to have a body on. So,
yeah, but that was fluky. And I think when you have a fluke like that, people kind of forget maybe who was involved more than they will ever forget what happened as a result of that. Tyreek Stevenson is a villain in this, but the biggest villain and the guy who's going to suffer the most embarrassment is Matt Eberflus, because there's an understanding, an acceptance of things that he won't publicly acknowledge. That it was dumb for them not to have any defensive resistance on the play before the Hail Mary. Bobby Wagner's been around the league for a very long time. One of the most senior linebackers in any NFL, on any NFL roster. He knows that it's just conventional wisdom that a defense in that situation would try to keep those receivers in bounds, would try to defend the sidelines and not give up 15 free yards when you make a Hail Mary pass possible because of the distance. That's football 101. Flusie choked, and everybody knows it. And now they're going to have to deal with the repercussions of that. You don't outlive this. This is not something that you're going to be able to forget in a week or a month, probably not even a year. If and when he gets fired at the end of the season, if they don't win more than they lose, and if they don't win more than they lose, he could get fired. It will be because he embarrassed himself against the Washington Commanders by doing the wrong thing, then doubling down afterward by not being able to acknowledge the fact that he made a mistake. He never has owned this yet, and that's why people are still talking about it.
And thank God, that Bobby Wagner didn't mention that he went. They ended the game with three timeouts in their hip pocket.
Yeah, same thing.
That would have been the trifecta, right? Do you still consider the Bears contenders in the NFC North, and who is the best team in the NFC?
I do not. I don't think it's realistic to think the Bears can contend for the NFC North title. I think before Sunday, it was conceivable. It was maybe a pipe dream, but you could make the argument because of their opportunities against the division opponents that they had yet to play. But what you suffered, again, in Washington, in Landover, Maryland, was not just a loss of a game, but a loss of confidence in the fact that the Bears can do anything that they shouldn't do, that they should win a game that they shouldn't win. They know how to lose. They don't know how to win. And teams that are contenders are teams that tell you on the field, they show you that they know how to win. We've yet to see that from the Chicago Bears. So, no, they're not in contention. They're a pretender in a division full of contenders. The Vikings are ahead of them. Certainly the Packers winning without a healthy Jordan Love are among the contenders. But the Lions are the class of the NFC North, and the Lions are the best team in the NFC.
The Lions are the best team in the NFC right now. You know, I'm going to hold out until we see that first game against the Packers at Soldier Field. If you win that, if the Bears are able to win that game, then I believe they are contenders. But I think they have to win. You know, the overall record is still going to matter in the race for the division as well, right? You know, you can't lose. So you got to win at Arizona. You got to come home and beat the Patriots. And then you got to be ready to go against the Packers. We're going to know that they're going to play three division games in 10 days, including, you know, possibly ruining our Thanksgiving against the Lions out in Detroit. So we're going to find out quick. But right now, yes, I'm going to say they are still contenders because they have yet to play a game in the division. But the division has the NFC's best team in it, and that is the Lions.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they had a three-game winning streak. They really should have made it four, but instead they found a way to give that game away, and we just went over the villains of the whole process. Do I consider the Bears contenders in the NFC North? Of course. You know, the results in the NFC North, TBD. You know, losing one game doesn't end your season. You start stacking losses. You lose in Arizona, now you got a problem. You know, this game is huge because you got to change the narrative, and I don't know that you're going to be allowed to, frankly. But you also have to win a game on the road. That's another problem you have. When you get into the division, we'll find out if they can play. They certainly had a chance to build up a lot of goodwill and improve their confidence, all the rest of it. And they've not done that. They haven't taken advantage of that opportunity. So the NFC North, we will learn more about as you go on. I think that Detroit right now is on fire. They're the best team in the division. They're the best team in the NFC. I still wonder if we're going to get anything out of San Francisco before this season is over. I still wonder if they get enough players back, if they get enough, I know there's guys that aren't coming back, but I still wonder if they can make some noise before the season is over. That would be the one team that I would hold out hope for if I were trying to evaluate the best teams in the NFC. But man, do the Lions look good. They look real good. And we'll find out.
It's really a fair question, David.
That's the voice of Bruce Levine, wondering what his thoughts are on the new White Sox skipper. What do you think of the way the Yankees responded down 3-0 to the Dodgers in a World Series that has not lived up to the hype until potentially last night?
I think the Yankees got to win two more games before I am even interested. I know that sounds bad. They did a great job of getting a game, but I mean, this is just you look at Aaron Judge and the slump that he's gone through in the playoffs and in the World Series in particular, and you wonder, is that how he's going down? Is that how he's going out? That's rough stuff. Basically, they had two guys that could hit. They had two guys that you had to worry about in their entire lineup. And then yesterday, they ended up getting 7 of their 11 runs from the bottom three bats in the lineup. I don't know that you can count on that in the World Series, but it was just good to see other guys get involved, right? That Grand Slam was really important. But I think they've lost a lot of goodwill, and I think that even if they win, they get back to LA and it's over.
Well, it's a series now. They were saying, what the heck? That was the word after the game, the Yankees. What the heck? Let's just go for it. What the heck? The bats are alive. The bottom of the order did it. And David, you and I don't remember if this was on or off the air, talked about it. Like, what in the world are they saving Cole for? Like, why wouldn't they have thrown Cole last night, especially with the Dodgers, you know, going with a bullpen game? Why wouldn't you have pitched your ace in a do-or-die situation at home? Well, it worked out.
Worked out.
Because now you have your ace. This is why you paid Cole all that money, is a game like this, a game five at home, do-or-die, and you win. And you make the series go back to L.A. So I picked the Dodgers. I'm cheering for the Dodgers. But tonight, I'm cheering for the Yankees for the love of sport. Like, I want this to keep going. And now, guess what? This is must-watch TV tonight.
I agree with that.
Because Cole is pitching. That's why. If it was some guy that I didn't know, you know, Brad Smith, or, you know, a bullpen day, I wouldn't care as much. I'd be like, Mully, like, wake me up if it gets back to L.A. But because Gerrit Cole's throwing, I'm all in. Again, another guy right on the edge of the Hall of Fame that we talked about when this thing started. This could be his Hall of Fame game tonight.
Freddie Freeman's closer, but I agree with that.
Oh, Freddie Freeman's in.
I think he's in.
David, I'll fill him. I'll put him on your ballot.
Will you do that? Okay, yeah, 5 years,
can,
call me.
You can just let me know.
I'll be eating an Uncrustable.
Is he done then? Is Freddie retiring? Is that what you're saying?
No, but he's in. I mean, he could strike out every time he's up for the rest of his life.
No doubt
about
it.
He's going to the Hall of Fame.
Gerrit Cole needs to go 9 innings tonight. He needs to remove the doubt. They need to look at this as a old school ace of the staff, season on the line, pitching assignment.
You're not taking him out after 88 pitches tonight.
Go 9. He can go 115 pitches tonight.
And maybe this is going to make the manager look very smart, by the way, that he took him out after 88 pitches.
Nothing is going to make that happen.
He'll feel like he's got all winter to rest because you let it all out tonight. If you're Gerrit Cole, you show people why you're worth the money you're worth, or you're getting paid. Why they invested all those, $300 million or so in Gerrit Cole?
A lot of Uncrustables.
By the way, yeah, it is. Ohtani looks hurt. He looks terrible.
Yeah, he didn't look
good. And he looks like he's playing through some pain. I like the way the Yankees responded. Anthony Volpe, young shortstop, came through in the clutch after Anthony Rizzo flew out to the shortstop with the bases loaded. Goodness sakes, Riz.
Hard to hit in that ballpark. Oh, no.
No, it's not. You fly ball to right field is a homer. I mean, and that was the only park that Will Smith hit that ball to right field and would have gone out of. Yeah, I'm in for game 6. I want this to go back to L.A., not just because I picked the Yankees, but I'm not ready for this World Series that we thought would be the greatest since 1982 to be over yet. So, yeah, Gerrit Cole, entertain us tonight and shut down that Dodgers lineup because we need to go back to L.A.
The MVPs are down, one by injury.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
How badly will the Bulls miss Lonzo Ball, who sprained his wrist and will miss at least 10 days? Who now needs to step up?
Well, I think it's a shame that Lonzo Ball was just making an impact and now he's got to sit out. But I think that if it, in an odd way, helps his knee and his body get used to the wear and tear of an NBA game, maybe next time when he comes back, 16 minute stint can become 20 minutes or 18 become 22. He's better. The Bulls are better with him on the floor. So this doesn't have to be a huge setback. It's a long season. Who steps up? I think probably you look at that rotation. If it goes 10, maybe Dalen Terry gets more minutes. Maybe Julian Phillips, who was good the other night, plays some more. Ayo Dosunmu is going to be a contributor with or without Lonzo Ball. But it probably opens up an opportunity for somebody like Terry, who wasn't really a part of the rotation. You'd like to see Bezelis contribute a little bit more, but he has been somebody looks like a rookie early on, so maybe that's not realistic. But hopefully Lonzo Ball can come back. I'm just relieved that it is his wrist and not his knee that we're talking about.
Great point. Wrist, not the knee. Wrist, not the knee. I'm sure everybody saw the headline and immediately thought, oh no, the knee. I think it's Ayo. I think Ayo's minutes will double. I don't know that Billy wants to get too deep into that bench. Now, I know they're playing at a frenetic pace, so he may not have a choice, but I'm guessing Ayo's pretty well-conditioned young man, and I think he can handle it.
You know, I think it's Coby White. I think he needs to hold the ball more. I think that he could be leading the second team if you wanted to go that route. I think he needs to score. If he scores, they win. And I think he needs to play well and more consistently. Listen, they're 500. You know, I'm very curious to see if they can keep that sort of momentum going. And I like the way that they're getting on, you know, getting out and playing everyone and scoring and shooting quick and all that stuff. It's fun to watch. I think that Io is also a guy that I think he's really come into his own and has improved as a player, and I think he's ready to do more. And I think Josh Giddey has to be better with no Lonzo. So I think there are a combination of players. Dalen Terry, he can defend, and he's very game, and he's got some bounce to him. But yeah, I think ultimately when Kobe plays well, they look really good. So hopefully that happens. All right, we've got the extra point, and we'll do that next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Your reaction to the White Sox as they announce Will Venable as their next manager.
He's got a great reputation. He comes to the Sox with excellent credentials. Not sure how that translates into wins or losses or the impact a manager can have, but they at least are bringing somebody into the organization that people of some accomplishment, people of stature in the game will vouch for. This is somebody who worked for Joe Maddon. He also sat next to Alex Cora. His previous job, he's coming from the Sox, from the Rangers, because he was Bruce Bochy's associate manager. He was brought into the Cubs organization back in 2017 after a playing career because Theo Epstein thought there was something about his personality worth exploring. That's pretty good company to keep. Those are great references on a baseball resume. So I think there's something to be excited about. He's a former Princeton basketball player. He also played in the majors. He's multi-talented. We'll see how he handles the stage. We'll see how he is behind the microphone. He's going to have to talk every day and be the White Sox spokesperson on a regular basis through some very difficult times. But he knows the drill. His dad was a baseball player at the major league level. His brother is a former Bear. Played in 2011 as a defensive back. So there are a lot of things about Will Venable that are interesting, kind of compelling, and make you want to know more about him. Looking forward to getting to know him better and learn more about what he has to stand for, what he has to say about his plan for making the White Sox into something you can be proud of again, because it's been a while. So I think they got a guy that makes you want to know more about him, and I think that of the people they were looking at, that was one of the names, if they were going to hire somebody without any experience, that was one of the names that was most intriguing.
Well said, David. I think he checked all the boxes that Chris Getz had laid out for us when told us what he was looking for in the next skipper, and they could have done a whole heck of a lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pumped up about it. I think it's great. I really do. I think that you get a guy that other people coveted in baseball, and you get a guy that has great credentials. He's a young guy. He's only 42. And he and Chris Getz can maybe pull off the partnership that he talked about. You know, they did a pretty good job of hiring a pitching game coordinator. And there's some of the things that Getz has done that you kind of like. Maybe not the trade he made at the deadline, but I think that they may have made a good hire here. I'm looking forward to hearing from him. I really am. I want to know why he wanted the White Sox job as opposed to other offers he may have had, or how he views this team, how long he believes it'll take to win with this group. You know, there's just a lot of questions I have about how we measure success and how we measure his accomplishment. I mean, I don't think they're going to be the worst team in baseball history next year. So that's good. That's a step forward. But I mean, this you think about the decline, you know, you went basically from a 500 team to having last year happen. it's a pretty steep decline. I don't know that the road back to respectability can be as steep. I think that it's more difficult to win than to lose. Let's put it that way. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to his thoughts and what he has to say, and hopefully change is always interesting. And he's the 44th manager in White Sox history. So congratulations.
And I wonder if they'll introduce him tomorrow. It's an off day in the World Series. You can do that, but I wonder if they'll do that or wait till next week.
I think MLB, it's up to them, right? They have to give permission, so who knows? All right, we got Joe O next. We'll get right to that. It is Mully and Haw on the Score. Money, 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 money. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We love talking to our buddy Joe Ostrowski every week. And Joe, like all our guests, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Morning, fellas. I feel the excitement about Venable coming to Chicago South Side.
Sounds sarcastic.
It's a wise choice, Joe.
Well, with Mully, I certainly feel it. It's an interesting question that you pose. What is success, right? And so I'm looking at it from the betting angle. So where do you kind of set this number? You're obviously, for the win total next year, you're obviously not going to set it anywhere close to where it was last year, because you'll get crushed with over money. Because what are the chances that that happens again? But, you know, with that roster, maybe it's a decent chance. But yeah, go ahead, David.
How do you do that without knowing who the roster is, though, Joe? I mean, what is the number now? Because the offseason hasn't even begun.
Right, right. They'll wait a little bit into free agency and see what happens with the roster. But my guess, I mean, I think we can have guesses. Does anybody think that they're going to make these big trades or start spending some money? No. So I think it's fair. We're going to talk about the White Sox the way that the league and the betting world was talking about the Oakland A's over the last couple of years. And that was by far the lowest in baseball going into last season. That number was 57.5. The White Sox was 61.5, and we know what happened. The year before that, it was 59.5 for Oakland. So when you go from 61 wins down to 41, you play it in the middle, but I would play it toward that top end, toward 100 losses. I would look at around 55.5. I think that's where you come in, and then let the betting market dictate if it goes up or down.
That is wise. Honestly, that's a good idea, Joe. I think that's fair. I'm really curious to hear what he has to say, why he turned down other jobs, why this job appeals to him. And it seems like he's more than just a manager with a young general manager and with a guy that doesn't have the same kind of experience. Maybe he will get more say in that job than some of these other jobs that were offered to him.
That's a good point, because you think about it. Okay, if you've had other opportunities, you have this experience, why would you pick this one? Why would you pick the team that just set the record? Because the expectations are so low? Or maybe people laugh at the White Sox that, hey, they're so behind the times. Well, maybe that's appealing to a manager, because they're actually going to have a little power that they're not being told constantly every move that they have to make.
So what do you think this Sunday, Joe? Bears go to Arizona after what happened in Landover, Maryland. We're still talking about that. What does that have in terms of a hangover effect?
Yeah, certainly everyone's talking about that. So before the results of Sunday, they have the look-ahead lines. They place lines on every game. So you see the differences when you have a major injury. Okay, you can kind of figure out what something is worth to the line. Before the results on Sunday, the Bears were favored to go and beat Arizona. It was -1.5. And then just after what happened, and you have to include Arizona, they go to Miami, which they were not supposed to do. It was a big Tua comeback. They were all excited about it. And they go and pull off the upset there, which is not easy to do going cross country. They do that. So it's positive for Arizona. And then it's a big negative, maybe bunch of bullet points on the Bears side. And so it flipped. So they make the Arizona the favorite. And right now, there's been some maneuvering early on in the week. Our friends at Circa have made it a pick 'em. BetMGM says the Cardinals -1. So it ended up moving a couple of points, not as much just based on injuries, too, because remember, there is that possibility Bears get some guys back, though. But yeah, in favor of Arizona, a couple of points. And what also jumps out is the total took a dip by a few points. That's interesting because we've seen in these true road games, Bears have been great at home and they've struggled on the road. That is what typically happens with rookie quarterbacks. But also in reaction to what happened on Sunday, the betting market is saying, as long as he stays healthy, forget any conversation about a Jaden Daniels offensive rookie of the year. I mean, it's his. It's going to be his. Caleb's the second favorite and he's 10-1.
What's when we think about the World Series, the Sox can't make their announcement unless they get permission or unless the season ends. When will the season end now? Did winning a game turn the odds on the Dodgers, even though they won the first three?
Well, the Yankees are favored for tonight, and that makes sense because they're at home and they've got their ace going with Cole against Flaherty. It's a repeat of the Game 1 matchup. Looking forward to that. Yeah, it's Yankees -150 and then the Dodgers a +125 underdog. And we all know how Game 1 went. I mean, if you get anything close to as exciting, I think everybody would be happy. Unless you're a Yankee fan and you're ripping a baseball out of Mookie Betts' glove. I mean, what the hell was that?
Oh, that's beautiful.
I couldn't believe it. Look, I bet Freeman for a home run yesterday because I felt like I had to. I couldn't believe the odds that you're getting. It was +625 last night for Freeman to do it again. I think you've got to keep doing that. I think the Dodgers win tonight. I do think they take care of business. A number of guys have really strong history against Cole, including Freeman. He's got a homer against him. Kike Hernandez, he's hitting nearly 400 against him. Betts, 350 in a good sample size. You guys are certainly right about Ohtani. I mean, I'm just going to take a look at strikeouts because, you know, he looks terrible at the plate. I would say for the Yankees, guys that have great history against Flaherty, Rizzo stands out. But, you know, it's probably been some time where he's had that great history, but in 23 at-bats, Anthony Rizzo has 3 home runs against Flaherty, which was shocking to me. But, wow. You know, keep in mind, it's been since about June since Rizzo's gone yard.
Thanks, Joe. Great stuff.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys.
See you, buddy. That is Joe Ostrowski. Great stuff.
Anthony Rizzo does not look healthy either. He looks like he came back.
He looks unwell.
He's trying to help his team. You give him credit for that, but he just doesn't look like the same player that he was when things are going well and he's in a groove. Bases loaded last night, popping out the shortstop. That's not a typical Anthony Rizzo at bat.
I read a story before the game about how it could be his last game with the Yankees at Yankees Stadium. I guess I'll read that story again tonight.
It could be. I'm not sure what his future holds. I'm not sure if he's going to play next year. Yeah. Maybe he doesn't yet either.
All right. We've got so much coming up. We're going to get into all of it. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.